The meeting of the Veterans Affairs Division will come to order. Okay, let's take care of the minutes right up front. Representative Dominguez, have you read over the minutes for February 29th?
Yes, I have, Chair.
Representative Dominguez moves the approval of the minutes of February 29th. Any discussion?
I checked his readings and he did really nice work.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Hogg. Further discussion? All in favor of approval of the minutes, aye?
Aye.
Any opposed? Minutes are approved. Okay, committee, we have nine bills, I think, before us today, so we need to move along. For all bill presenters and testifiers, we'd like to try and keep the presentations and questions to 10 minutes, so we can hopefully get done close to on time. Representative Murphy, are you ready? Okay.
Morning, Mr. Chair and members. I hope that I'm so brief that I give you the gift of time.
Okay. Representative Murphy, I'll move your bill. I move House File 3762 with recommendation to pass and be returned to the Agricultural, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Policy Committee. Go ahead, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a piece of legislation that would create a Veterans Health Care Advisory Committee. This is a result of the work of the Governor's Long-Term Care Commission on Veterans Health that I served on this summer with Representative Stevenson. I know that you had a full report on the Commission's work in January in a joint committee. This legislation would provide the Department of Veterans Affairs with advice on providing vets quality long-term care and anticipated future care needs. What this does essentially is provide both the Department of Veterans Affairs and the new deputy advice on long-term care for the vet's home and long-term care in the community going forward. One of the things that we noted as we contemplated a change in governance for the vet's home was that it would be important for the Department of Veterans Affairs to have advice from health care and long-term care professionals as they set their strategic future. This advisory committee sets that future. I hope to earn your support.
Okay, thank you. Do you have any testify? Okay, Ms. Keel.
Okay. We're ready for questions.
Okay, that's fine. Representative Stevenson, you worked with this group. Do you have any comments to make before we go on?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this was kind of, as we talked about on the floor yesterday a little bit, this was a protracted discussion amongst a lot of professionals in the state. I think the idea here is exactly what we need to get at in order to really take a good look at the state for a implementation of the long-term care for veterans. And I think as there are a lot of requests coming in, this is the document, this is the team, this is the group that we're going to look to determine what are the demographics that are going to best serve our veterans in the state. It may not be Minneapolis, but I kind of believe it is because it's so close to the VA hospital and it's a prime piece of land that's got a lot of history. So that was one of the reasons we put up a battle yesterday on the House floor. But I also think that it'll look outstate to determine what are the best places in outstate that are going to best serve a central demographic of people. This is exactly what we need to do. I commend Representative Murphy for bringing this forward, and I think it is a very important piece of legislation.
All right. Thank you, Representative Stevenson. Any questions or comments from members? Representative Dominguez.
Just one comment on this. Are these appointments going to continuously be, or this is just one-time shot, or how does this work?
Mr. Chair and Representative Dominguez, I think the advisory committee would continue forward to give advice to the commissioner and the deputy commissioner.
All right. Thank you. And any follow-up, Representative Dominguez? Okay, anything further, committee members? Okay, I'll renew the motion that House File 3762 pass with recommendation to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I hope you have a great evening.
Thank you, Representative Murphy.
You always have a good evening.
That's right. Okay, Representative Tilbury. Oh, there you are. Yes. Okay, Representative Tilbury, I'll move your bill to get it before the committee. I move that House File 3417 pass with recommendation to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Policy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is hopefully a simple bill that we can look at, and I do have a testifier if we need to have any questions answered. What this does is it allows the Office of Secretary of State to waive the reinstatement fee for any business owner who is unable to maintain a current status due to combat or employment outside the United States related to the national defense. So if someone has to dissolve their business, go overseas, they're wherever that they're posted, when they come back to open up their business again, they don't have to pay the $25 reinstatement fee.
Okay. Does your testifier have some testimony?
only
questions?
Only okay. Questions, sir.
Thank you. Committee members, questions? Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was just wondering, if you look on the bill on line 1.12, it says the Secretary of State may waive. Is the word may versus shall there for a reason, or could you speak to that? Would you prefer shall to make it stronger, or is there a reason not to?
Representative Tilbury.
In any way I can answer.
Sure, I'm going to turn that over to my testifier, who is Benita Harvo.
Okay, thank you. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Harvo, if you can identify yourself and who you represent.
I'm Benita Harvey. I'm with the Office of the Secretary of State. Mr. Chair, Representative Wardlow, and members, I guess our office would not, we would be okay for shall if you would require us to do that. I guess we use may as more permissive. And at this point, I don't think we would object to either one.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just want to make sure that we do have H3417A. There's an amendment 1. Did we get that?
I don't think we have it, no.
We don't have that?
No.
What we wanted to do was, on that amendment, was to make sure we clarified terms better.
Okay.
On the bill. So that's really what that's for.
Representative Tilbury, is it okay with you if we just table this bill for a little while until the copies get here? We'll move on to another bill and then
no
come
problem.
Back here. Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll table that bill for now.
Thank you.
And let's see, Junkie. My God. Okay, Representative Detmer, are you ready to present your bill? Yeah. Representative Detmer, I think we'll start with 3427, if that's okay with you. All right, Representative Detmer, welcome to your committee, and if you'd like to move your bill.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and committee, and I believe I have an oral amendment for 3427.
Okay, Representative Detmer moves House File 3427 to pass with recommendation to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Policy. And Okay. We have copies of the amendment, but it's going to have to be an oral amendment, from what I understand.
Mr. Chairman, that's correct.
Yes.
It would appear on page 3. And 311 and 312, line 311, 312. And the amendment that you're getting is not for this bill, it's for the next bill.
Oh, it is?
Right.
Okay. My mistake. I apologize. Okay, Representative Detmer, which line again is that?
Page 3, BD 311 and 312.
311 and 312.
And there isn't.
Oh, okay. And you, Representative Detmer, it looks like you do have an amendment prepared for this. Is that right?
Well, we don't have a copy.
Could I have a copy, please?
Okay.
How are we doing? Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, I will turn it over to my testifier here.
Okay, let's do that. Then we'll come back to the amendment. Good, thank you.
And he will speak to the amendment.
Okay, thanks.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is Charles Schaefer from the Small Business Assistance Office at the Department of Employment and Economic Development. The amendment relates to, on page 3, section 6, regarding when the services are going to be provided. And what we are proposing here is on page 3, line 12, delete the phrase, given additional marketable skills obtained during deployment. As written, this would make the services of the displaced worker program available only for people who had acquired new skills during the time of deployment. Our intention is to delete that to make the services more broadly available to any returning veteran who has been displaced from employment by virtue of having been deployed. So it's a broadening of the availability of the program.
Okay, thank you. Representative Detmer, do you want? Why don't you move your amendment? It's the AO8-1272 amendment.
Yes, I move it, please.
All right. Any further discussion on the amendment? Okay, we're ready to vote. All in favor of the motion for the amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay. Representative
Detmer. Yes, Mr. Chairman, House File 3427. This bill establishes a interest-free loan program for businesses that have suffered severe economic losses as a result of an essential employee of the businesses being called to active duty. Established in this bill is revolving loan accounts. Loans may be granted up to $20,000 per business. Monies paid by the principal of the account are deposited back in the revolving loan account, and interest earned on the money accrues to the account. The cost of establishing and administering the program may be funded from this account. And this bill also expands the dislocated worker program to include veterans who were honorably discharged since September 11th, 2001, and that are earning less than should be getting paid by their qualifications, including the skills they developed while serving in the military. Additionally, this bill exempts employers from calculating unemployment payments in their tax liabilities for laying off temporary employees, filling in for the employees serving on active duty.
Okay, thank you. Colonel Almas, did you have something to add?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Colonel Eric Almas, Department of Military Affairs. Just wanted to point out that when we look at returning veterans, we really need to look at three areas. We have to look at the service member themselves, their families, and the employers. And as we did this, we used the Governor's Support Cabinet and then the Yellow Ribbon Task Force to go and work with the agencies and with stakeholders like businesses to find out really what's important to help make sure we address all three areas. And a lot of the initiatives in here came from employers, like the last one on the unemployment insurance and the one for the loans, and then also the displaced worker actually came right from DEED. So it shows how agencies and the public sector can come in and partner together to really work to reduce barriers and help veterans return back home and be successful, and their families, as well as the businesses they work with. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you, Colonel Almas. Questions from members? Okay. Anybody from the audience anybody from the audience who wishes to testify on the bill? All right. I think we're ready to vote then. I'll renew, Representative Detmer renews his motion to pass with recommendation and as amended House File 3427 to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Detmer. And Representative Detmer moves with recommendation House File 3660 to be passed to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Policy. Go ahead, Representative Detmer.
Yes, Mr. Chairman and Committee. And you should have a copy now of the oral amendment in front of you for House File 3660.
Yes, it looks like we have that copy.
Basically, in this amendment, the worker must provide reasonable notice to the employer when requesting time off, and the employer must provide reasonable amount of non-paid time off for the employer. The employer cannot compel the employer to use unaccumulated but unused vacation for these events.
Now, Representative Detmer, this is new language that will be added, which line?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's correct.
2.23.
Yes.
Okay, so.
Mr. Chairman,
yes.
That new language would be added at the bottom of the page, page 1.
After line 1.23.
Correct, sir.
Okay, thank you. And Representative Detmer moves his oral amendment. Any discussion to the amendment? Okay. All in favor of the motion, aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Representative Detmer.
And Mr. Chairman and committee, House File 3660, this bill makes it illegal to fire or punish an employee for having a spouse or other family member serving in the armed forces. Furthermore, this makes the bill illegal to punish or fire an employee for attending military events associated with family members that serve. This bill permits an effective employee to take action against an employer who violates the above legislation, and violation of this law is a gross misdemeanor.
Okay. Either of your testifiers would like to speak to the bill?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Colonel Eric Almas, Department of Military Affairs. You know, the same applies to this bill as the previous bill we discussed. I won't cover about the importance of addressing all three interest groups. Look a little bit back to history. If you look at the first part of this of the statute here, several years ago we extended this protection to service members. As a result of that, we've helped a number of service members, and we've not received a single complaint from employers that it was too onerous or that we did something that was put too hard of a burden on them. So as far as a historical perspective, dealing with this type of statute with, you know, service member, it's worked very well. And so we asked, why do we want to extend this to the family members? I received, I call them congressionals, but requests from either governor's office, members of legislature, or from Congress every single day. And one of the largest issues we have is issues surrounding family members and them trying to keep things going while the service member's away. And a lot of times, you know, they're giving up a lot of extra things. But what this law would do is just extend those same protections to, that we give to the service member, to the family member. But also we crafted in a way, as shown by the amendment that was offered up, that was we worked out with Steve, is that we wanted to make sure there's a reasonable nature to this so that it's not abused by family members and the employer is protected as well. So we feel this provides a real good balance between the needs of the family, yet protecting the requirements that the employer has and keeping the family member employable. And the part that talks about the penalty phase, that was already in the existing statute. We just kind of reworked a little bit for clarity. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you, Colonel Holman. And Representative Detmer, the other testifier would like to...
Nothing from us.
Okay, thank you. Representative Hosh.
It's one of the Larrys.
Yes, it's one of the Larrys.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one question. When looking at the amendment a little more closely, is reasonable defined anywhere in statute on what reasonable time is for notice?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I went over with legal counsel on this yesterday because it appears in there several times, and it is a word commonly used and used by employment and by deed in other areas to help provide a word that if you only get notified 3 days ahead of time, giving 1 day's notice is okay. But if you got notified 6 months ahead of time of an event, not giving your employer, you know, weeks and weeks of notice would have been inappropriate. So it's a word commonly used throughout the statute. It's a word that our legal counsel found acceptable. So from that perspective, we are comfortable with it.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Further questions, committee members?
And Mr. Chairman, just to add on to that, I know in the military, we have policies in the military regarding our employers that we need to give them notice, reasonably time notice that we're going to be gone or going to be gone for training and so forth. So it's used quite often in the military.
All right. Thank you. Representative Wardlaw. Oh, okay. Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Colonel Olmos for Representative Detmer. You stated that this has been helpful for our members. Have you had family members' issues that have been brought before you that this would address? I mean, is there an overabundance of family that have been experiencing this?
Colonel Olmos.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, indeed. As I stated, last year alone received over a dozen specific issues regarding employment of spouses or family members, immediate family members of service members when they're deployed. It's one of the largest areas that we have a concern or that we receive as concern through the Congressional Request Network.
To follow up? Okay, Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because of the penalties in here, the gross misdemeanor, is that going to make this bill go to public safety and civil justice?
Yes.
Thank you.
Anything further, committee members? Anybody from the audience who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Okay. Representative Detmer renews his motion that House File 3660, as amended, be passed with recommendation to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Policy. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, Representative Tilbury, we'll take your bill off the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You should have the Amendment 1 available to you now.
Okay. All right, Representative Tilbury moves the. Oh, I'm sorry, you're not a committee member. I'll move the amendment H3417A1. Okay, any discussion to the amendment? All right.
Representative Ward Mohead made a recommendation that in the amendment it would be line 15 where we change the word may to shall, and that wouldn't be a problem if we do that.
Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Representative, because I was looking for that line in the amendment. And, yeah, I'd like to change in line 1.15, I'd like to change the word may to shall in the amendment.
Okay, Representative Tilbury?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That'd be acceptable.
Representative Wardlow moves his oral amendment that on line 1.15 may be crossed out and shall replace. Okay, discussion to the amendment? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, thank you. Yes, okay. We've just amended the amendment. Now we need to vote on the whole amendment. Okay, any discussion to the amendment? All right, all in favor of adopting the H3417A1 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Representative Tilbury.
Well, I'm available for any questions you might have from the last discussion. And before the vote, I just want to make sure that Representative Bigham knows that it's her birthday, and I wish her a happy birthday.
Yes. And Representative Bigham, happy birthday Sunday.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, it is Sunday. And thanks for the donation.
Yes, I don't know who brought the
29 in heaven.
Okay, good. It's good to hear you. Happy
my
birthday.
My social security number, Mr. Chair.
Yes. Okay. Discussion to the bill as amended.
29. Exactly.
Okay, I think we're ready to vote on the bill. I renew the motion to adopt with recommendation and as amended House File 3417 be passed to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tilbury. For the sake of time, while they're setting up, I would like to, Madam Chair, I would like to move before the committee with recommendation to pass to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs, House File 3617.
Okay, that is Representative Quinn's motion. It looks like you're going to win the award for the day for the bill with the most visuals. So, Representative Quinn, please proceed.
Okay, I'm going to step out of the way and let the testifiers make their presentation. I would just like to remind all of you that we're short on time, so we're trying to hold the time. So, thank you.
Okay, who are we going to start with here? We've got several people on the list. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
I'm sorry?
Please state your name and go ahead with your testimony.
Yes, Madam Chair and members, I am Robert Pittner, COO of Advanced Healing Systems.
Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair. We're here in support of House File Number 3617 to talk about the formulary process that we have executed and implemented across the state, Minnesota, long-term care, and Iowa, Wisconsin, Illinois. And we're here to support the effort to bring this to the veterans in the VA system. With us, we have several people that will testify to that have been treated by this formulary, as well as executed it. In the interest of time, we have 4 points that I want to make. May I stand?
Please. We do need to hear you, though, on the record, so I can pull the mic kind of
okay.
Great, thanks.
The formulary system in your packet, you will have a lot of information that will take you into great detail on the formulary process and its results.
Members,
but there are 4 points that I'd like to demonstrate. Here we go. The formulary process has 4 elements to it, and it is starts out with a component of nurse training. We want this formulary to be executed by the staff at a VA system so that they can administer it and run it. Secondly, there is a diagnostic component up front to classify and reclassify wounds so that they'll be treated appropriately. Third, we have a web-based data management system that empirically proves the outcomes of the treatment so that there is no emotion. It's all empirical data proving the outcome. And number 4, we'll provide a set of guidelines for the nurses, the DOMs, the administrators, for every wound, of every type of wound. There will be guidelines that will tell them how to treat those wounds. So it is a coordinated set of processes that are interrelated that all work together to bring those outcomes. The second point is, I can't see this. And we're going to turn it over to this one here. Yep. We're going to ask our director of nursing, Kathy King, to walk you through some examples of the treatment and the cure. And we use the word cure because that's what we do. We not just close wounds, we cure wounds.
Ms. King, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chairwoman. The picture that you see of the two legs, that was a woman, 87-year-old woman, who lived in an assisted living and was taking a pot roast out of her oven and fell backwards with the roast that landed on both of her legs. She ended up at one of the local hospitals in the burn unit, and they decided with her age and the fact that she weighed 87 pounds that there was just nothing for them to do. They couldn't graft. They couldn't do anything for her. And so she was transported to my facility where we implemented the technology we use, which is called PEMF therapy. And in 64 days, you see the result. From she was totally healed and is now back at home in her apartment. And so, and I've used this technology now for 5 years, and this is the most dramatic case, but we do get this kind of outcome for all wounds that we heal.
I'd like now to introduce this case right here. We have the gentleman who went treatment for an amputation. Could you go and get up?
Welcome to the committee, and state your name for the record.
My name is James Wren.
Welcome, Mr. Wren.
Thank you. As you can see, I had an injury on my toe
and so there was no way they felt that the doctor that was treating it felt that it could be healed, so they had amputated my toe. But then the problem came that
Do you want to sit down?
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
The problem came up is that this was not healing either, so the next step was to remove my foot and possibly most of my lower leg to make sure there was enough blood flow. My daughter had worked at a nursing home and was aware of this healing system and brought it to our attention. My wife looked into it. We contacted this company, and the rest is history, basically. It did heal the wound. When I believe the doctors were sure that it was not going to heal. So without this system, I would have lost my leg some time ago, and I would have lost my mobility. And I think that mobility is a very important part of my life anyway. I think it is for most people.
Well, we're glad it worked. Looks like a miracle. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you. For the record, in the last 24 months, we have prevented over 9 amputations at a cost of $150,000 per amputation.
Hmm.
The fourth component I want to talk about is the cost savings that this system provides. We have documented over the last 2 years 50% savings in line item costs in caring for long-term chronic wound patients. These costs ripple all the way through all elements of treating wound care. At $1.15 per day, veterans home, this is a very, very smart economic decision. The cost part of this is a very important part of our success in the long-term care. More details in your packet.
Okay. We have another testifier.
Well, yes.
I'm Mary Hafner. I'm Director of Quality Assurance for Elam Care Incorporated. And this, I served as an interim director of nursing one of our Minneapolis facilities a year ago. It's from December.
Excuse me, Ms. Hafner. We're having trouble seeing you. Maybe we could move these posters here. Thank you.
From December 2006 through July of 2007 as the interim director of nursing. And I implemented this pulse electronic magnetic field, the PEMF, wound healing system at that facility and saw dramatic results of wounds, all types of wounds, diabetic wounds, surgical wounds, as well as wounds at stasis, resulting from peripheral vascular disease that were not had not healed for years, and saw results where we were able with this stimulation able to heal wounds and create amputations. I have the experience, personal experience myself, on January 18th having a routine surgery on my left foot that ended up with a severe infection. And 3 weeks ago today, my physician wanted to amputate my middle toe on my left foot. And I said, I begged him, I said, we have implemented this system in our facilities, and we have 9 nursing homes in 3 different states, plus assisted living facilities. And we have seen such dramatic results. Before you want to amputate, I really want to try this PEMF machine. And so he finally agreed. He said, well, I guess if it works in your facilities, we can give it a try. 2 weeks later, there was dramatic improvement in the wound, my wound, and he was able to say, I think we're going to be able to save the toll. And so as a provider of the advanced healing system and then also as a participant, I'm very thankful for this particular system. I'm also a veteran of the Air Force Nurse Corps of the Vietnam War, and I can see how this would benefit. I wish we would have had something like this when during the, we see so many wounds as all the veterans come back. We know that they have a number of wounds. And so I really see the value of this technology, and it is new advanced technology, and it is training. I had to train my own orthopedic surgeon to give this a try, and he agreed, and the results have been dramatic.
Thank you. And is there another person? Okay.
We're done, Madison.
All right. Representative Coonan, you want to come back up to the table and let's see if we have any questions from members? Sure. Representative Coonan, it looks like the gist of the bill is a demonstration project at Minnesota's five veterans homes. And I see there's some other components to it. Maybe if you want to just give us a little bit of the highlights of the bill.
That is pretty much what it's about, is a demonstration project at the veterans home. It's also set up so that if it doesn't work, it doesn't cost the department anything. So that's, you know, it's a demonstration project.
Okay. Questions from members? Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious, the gentleman who lost his toll, do you think it would have, if you would have gone to these people first, could you have saved your toll, or can you answer that? I don't know.
You want to come to the mic? Mr. Wren.
I can't answer that for sure, but I think that it's likely that I would have been able to save it, yes. I think the system, I'm a firm believer that this system really works, and I think that I wish that I had known about the system at that time.
Follow-up, Representative Wardlow.
Yes, thank you. Do military installations, like the naval hospitals, for instance, have they tried this, or does anybody talk to them about this? And with all the veterans coming home with all these wounds, field hospital in Baghdad could probably
Well, actually, quite frankly, some of the technologies we have are being applied in Iraq and Afghanistan. A particular silver product that we use is being used in both of those countries with great success. We have our core market at this point has been long-term care, outpatient clinics. We have made demonstrations at the VA hospitals and their outpatient clinics. And we have a couple of trials going on at this point.
Thank you.
Okay, other questions from members? Representative Houston.
Just a kind of a curiosity, a quick question on the terms of the therapy. Is this electromagnetic? Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes. How it actually works, and I'm sorry we weren't clear, is that there's a basic box, and this therapy is applied through a wand or a wire. It's just laid over the wound. There's no, you don't have to remove dressings, clothing, anything like that. And there's an electromagnetic flow of current that comes through that twice a day for 30 minutes. You turn the machine on, you can't feel anything, and the machine automatically shuts itself off. And what it actually does is cause healthy cells to migrate to the wound site and to build from the bottom of the wound so that you it builds from the bottom out rather than typically what happens is we heal just a thin layer over and it is prone to breaking open again. And so that's exactly how it works.
Thanks, Madam Chair.
Okay. Other questions?
No, I got one.
Mr. Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Will this cure my arthritic knee?
Well, actually, what I will tell you is that one of the kind of a side effect of this technology is that what it also does is to reduce pain, including inflammation, because it kind of reduces any kind of fluid that might be in the area. And so one of the benefits, the therapeutic benefits, is it does reduce pain as well.
Okay. Representative Dominguez.
You know, I was thinking, thank you, Madam Chair. One question I have, I noticed that you just had limbs and toes. Does this also work on the facial part of your body, your neck on up?
Representative, Madam Chair, essentially it can be used anywhere on the body. The only
if someone has a pacemaker or if someone has cancer, those are the only two real contraindications because it would then proliferate those cells.
All right.
Okay. And Sarah, anybody from the audience that would like to testify for or against this bill? Okay. Seeing none, Representative Coonan renews his motion that House File 3617 be recommended to pass and be re-referred to Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs. All in favor of that motion, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails and the bill passes to the Ag Committee. Thank you, Representative Coonan. And next up we have Representative Junkie. I'll move that Representative Junkie's bill, House File 3763, be recommended to pass and be referred to his committee. Okay, the Policy Committee, Ag, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs.
Which one are we doing, sir?
3763, okay. The Vet Home Board of Directors functions.
And Madam Chair and members,
welcome, Chair Junkie.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This is a bill that basically it's a housekeeping bill needed since the executive order was signed last fall to transfer, actually dissolve the Veterans Home Board and transfer the budgets and the duties over to the Department of Veterans Affairs. Obviously, there's a lot of statutory work that needs to be done to clean that up. This bill addresses that. I do have Department of Veterans Affairs here, and they'd be willing to chime in on, and answer questions if you have. I also have one testifier who'd like to say just a brief word.
Okay, thank you, Representative Junkie. Ms. Keel?
I'm just here for questions.
Oh, okay. Oh,
and again, Mr. Chair, it's pretty straightforward. I mean, you can read through it, but really it's just, it's removing Veterans Home Board in the language and really just doing the corrections throughout the statute. There's nothing really, I don't think, controversial here, but again, any questions you might have on it, we're happy to answer. And here comes the one testifier I know about. Maybe we can go to that and then move on.
Okay, let's take the testimony first, then we'll go to questions. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Mark Maxey, representing AFSCME Council 5. Although this is a technical housekeeping bill, it's a long road that we've come to get to this place, and we'd like to thank members of the committee that have worked on this sort of thing. For our part, for AFSCME, we represent a number of the workers, as you know, at the Minneapolis home as well as the other veterans' homes. And, of course, I need not reiterate the numerous problems and violations we've had to deal with and try to overcome. And for us, it started to build a much more positive relationship. It started working with the Vets Home Board last year, Representative Dominguez, on a smaller bill that went through. And then the veterans, the commission that the governor appointed, we had Representative Severson and also Representative Murphy on that. And as that went forward, AFSCME strongly supported the transfer to Veterans Affairs, which came out of the executive order and is now made more permanent through this bill. And I think the what people need to know is, while it is true that this transfer changes nothing for the unions legally, it's our hope that the culture at the homes and the care given to the residents will improve. So far, everybody seems quite happy with the new deputy commissioner. I think it's good that we have somebody who has a background in direct care, came up through the ranks. And as a matter of fact, later this morning, a couple of our people are going to be meeting with him to try to further improve labor relations. So we just want to pledge you, we'll do everything we can to work with the department and with the veterans group to really have long-term improvement at the vets, the Minneapolis home, and all the homes. So thank you for this legislation.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Maxey. Any questions from committee members? None? Okay. Anybody from the audience who wishes to testify for or against the bill? Okay. Representative Tinglestad renews her motion that House... Representative Severson.
And Representative Junkie and members, as I sat on a commission this last summer, we had some good discussions And as we were talking about doing what this bill is going to do, one of my major concerns was that pushing the health care, veterans health, long-term health care, into the Department of Veteran Affairs would not wash out the funding for the health care initiatives for the veterans' homes. The concerns were that as you have the Veterans Administration come forward with their budget, which is not just health care, it has to do with education, reintegration, it has to do with a whole myriad of things within the department itself, that the as we push those two together, and then the Veterans Home Board, or the Veterans Long-Term Care Initiative, which usually sat on its own through the Department of Health, would be pushed together, and if there was a squinch in the budget, then it would be on the Vets Department altogether, and that they would be vying for funding, not just between the Veterans Department with its services, but as well as the long-term home care. So those are some concerns I brought forward, and my hopes are that as we go forward in this thing, that we can take those still as two separate issues, that our veterans still need to be served outside the long-term care initiative. There still needs to be funding available for that, for the services they provide, as well as the health care initiative. So those are some things that I'm sure Representative Junkie is chair of the Veterans Committee will be watching, and I will be watching as well. And Representative Cunningham, you know, those are things that we really need to take to heart, that there is a tremendous need there. And because we push them together, we need to be cognizant of that there are needs on both sides of the aisle and not just look at it as one entity.
And Mr. Chair, just those comments, you know, the Veterans Home Board was a standalone budget up till this time. Years back, it wasn't the Department of Veterans Affairs, as we know, so it's kind of come full circle. It never was under the Department of Health or Human Services budget, so we are moving forward. I think the combination, Representative Severson, you're right, what we're going to be looking at in our committee over in finance is to find the efficiencies, but not necessarily, you know, the care providers, medical care providers, will be treated kind of separately, but certainly we only need one legislative liaison now, and we only probably need one finance department now. And so there will be some efficiencies with this that we're going to try and discover, which should save some dollars that hopefully then can be used for improved care. That's our hope, is to actually move dollars out towards the long-term and domiciliary care that the old Homes Board used to have control over. So we're looking forward to a positive movement of those funds in the future.
Okay, yeah, thank you for that, Representative Junkie and Representative Severson. Any further comments or questions, committee members? Okay, Representative Tinglestead renews her motion that House File 3763 be passed with recommendation to the Committee on Agricultural, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion is approved. Okay, Representative Junkie, I will move House File 3749 be passed with recommendation to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Policy. Representative Junkie.
And, Mr. Chair, this is a bill concerning Veterans Cemetery, and I'm going to just turn it over to Ms. Keel, who will explain what it is.
Okay, good. Thank you. And Ms. Keel, welcome to the committee. Go ahead.
Thank you. Again, for the record, Mr. Chair and committee members, my name is Christine Keel, Department of Veterans Affairs. This bill simply just changes the statute from cemeteries to allow us to pursue the option of having more than one state-run veteran cemetery. As you know, we only have one right now in Little Falls. This only changes the statute language. But in matter of full disclosure, we are pursuing getting an additional state cemetery. So right now, while this just changes the language, if the federal government approves for us to get one additional cemetery in the Duluth area, they are looking at Lower St. Louis County, Upper Carlton County, around the Rensselaer area to put in another state veteran cemetery. If we get approval from the federal government, we will have that coming forward.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Keel. Questions? Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Will this be a new plot of land, or will they cordon off another cemetery and just use the space that it has? Or and will the feds give us a grant or anything?
Ms. Keel.
Chair and Representative Wardlow, the federal government does pay for the building and maintenance of the cemetery, and we as the department are only responsible for the staffing levels to maintain the cemetery. But for care and building, the federal government does give us a grant for that. Right now, we are working with the DNR, and they are looking at actually giving us land up around the Jay Cook State Park area. So there will be no cost for us to acquire the land should we reach a deal with the DNR.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Further questions? Okay. I'll renew my motion that House File 3745 be... House File 3749 passed with recommendation to the Committee on Agricultural, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Johnson. Okay. Representative Tingleston. All right. Representative Tingleston moves House File 3686 be passed with recommendation to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, Veterans Affairs Policy. Welcome to your committee, Representative Tingleston. Go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Coonan. As you can hear, I'm losing my voice here, so I'm going to rely on my testifier, Kerr here, with this bill. There is a handout coming around. And I wanted to sort of preface all this by saying that I've been on this committee for 4 years now, and that's been during the time where we've had, you know, active deployment from our state. And it's amazing to me all the state laws that are affected by our military members being deployed. And so this, again, is one of those issues that has come up based on a constituent from my area, and we need to do some updates in our state laws here. And it relates to protection of reservist-owned businesses during active service, and this bill will also be going to the Civil Law Committee here, too. But the handout coming around, I think, gives a good overview of why this is needed, the protections that's put in place as our military people are deployed, and issues come back home here related to their business. So with that, if I could turn it over to Colonel Kerr to give you the details on the bill.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. And my name is Don Kerr, and I'm the principal planner for the Department of Military Affairs and also the acting director of military reintegration within the Military Affairs Department. As Representative Tingleston stated, Mr. Chair, fairly straightforward what we found. As I'm sure you all are well familiar, we thought we had covered all contingencies in previous legislation, and lo and behold, another one comes up. And in previous legislation, we had protected the rights of individual soldiers and their families from civil action while they were deployed, much in line with the federal USARA law. However, we failed to cover wholly owned businesses of those service members, and we had a service member who was a contractor who deployed to Iraq, and unfortunately, because he was not available, had to back out of some contracting contracts since he was the only employee of his wholly owned contracting business, and found that his business was not protected in the language of existing statute. This would extend the same protection to the businesses that are wholly owned by the soldier and his wife or spouse. And really, it leaves a lot of discretion to the court to apply the ruling. It does provide for an immediate 60-day stay, and then that stay is extendable based on the court's own decision with the requirement for the service member and the service member's commander to validate the actual impact against appearing in court. And that's kind of the summary, sir.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Questions, committee members? Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Tingleston. I'm wondering, is this under USARA? Typically what happens on that is there can be no civil action taken against an individual until 60 days after he's returned from a deployment. So is that essentially what this does for their business, that their business is basically held harmless from the litigant system until 60 days after their return?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Severson, generally, yes. It actually leaves discretion to the court to decide how long the extension will be, but it allows the court to extend for up to 60 days after the return of the service member from their deployment.
And follow-up?
To that point, Mr. Chair and Mr. Kerr, thanks. This is a great bill. I mean, this is exactly what we need, particularly in Minnesota, where we have a lot of civilian soldiers, you know, who are going in to deployments and then coming back and going into the business sector. You know, typically when you get into the military and you go in for to the Navy, or the Air Force, Marine Corps, you're in and you're doing it for a continual stint. When we have a reserve force like we do in Minnesota, where they're going in and out, and we do have a lot of business owners who have stepped up to the plate. We've had a significant amount of those who have met adversity coming back because they're the sole proprietor. Their business is under assault when they come back. And this is exactly the kind of legislation we need to give them the breathing room to get their business back on their feet when they get back. So thanks so much for bringing this forward.
Good. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, thank you. And testifier, the way I read it, and I support this, I think it's a very good bill. It only covers or protects the soldier and his immediate family. What if he has co-ownership with, say, with a brother or relative?
Mr. Kerr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Detmer, yes, you are correct, sir, in that it is somewhat limited in its scope as a wholly owned business. The thought on the part of the department was that this would provide adequate protection, and in the event that a critical member of a business team were departing, that may be something that's still hanging out there.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, anything further, committee members? Anybody in the audience, or is anything said?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to add one thing. I know as I was talking to some of the committee members before the meeting this past week, one of the questions came up is, would a service member re-up to just avoid coming back and dealing with some situations? And I've been conferring with counsel here about that, and we believe there's enough coverage in the bill now with the definition of active duties and active service and other things in the bill. And I don't know if you want to comment on that at all. Or
Mr. Kerr?
Mr. Chair, Representative Tingle said, yes, we believe that based on... we were also concerned because we did indeed have a past case where there was a soldier not from Minnesota who effectively was extending his deployments overseas strictly to dodge a civil court action back in the continental United States. And that is one reason that you see in Subdivision 2 leaving great latitude to the court to determine whether the stay should be granted, and that determination will be made based on a soldier's or service member's letter along with a letter from the service member's commander. So we feel that level of oversight provides enough protection to warrant passage of the bill.
Okay, good. Thank you. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One quick question. Does this provide enough protection for those that are business-owned needing to pay their taxes on the business?
Mr. Kirk.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dominguez, I don't know that I'm in a position to do that analysis.
Representative Tingle said...
Representative Dominguez, I can check into that between now and the next committee. So.
All right. Anything further, committee? Anybody from the audience who wishes to testify on the bill? Okay, Representative Tingle said renews her motion that House File 3686 be recommended to pass to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Policy. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Thank you, Representative Tinglestead. Representative Severson. Representative Severson moves House File 3672 and that it be passed with recommendation to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economy, Veterans Affairs Policy. Welcome to your committee, Representative Severson, and go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and we'll just take a little trip back about 3 weeks ago, and Representative Howes was here with his Vietnam War Veteran Memorial Day. And one of the things that kind of had come to the forefront at that point was the forgotten war. And that's what Korea is often referred to as, the forgotten war. And I think because it came out of World War II, people were ready to move on. We got engaged into that conflict, and there was not, you know, the normal resolution that we typically see these world conflicts where there is a victory that is decisive. In fact, it was an armistice, and we still have occupation there today. So there was kind of an unwritten line that took place there, and people really did get forgotten. I mean, people would come home, some of our soldiers would come home, and they'd say, where have you been for the last nine months, a year, 2 years? And so that, in concert with some of the fallout from that, in which our members were ill-treated when they got back, kind of precipitated this legislation here today, that we do not forget the service of our veterans, no matter what the conflict was. But in this particular case, we're not so much honoring the veterans. We do have an established Veterans Day, and that was one of the things we had talked about in the Vietnam Memorial as well. But rather that we would honor the day of the truce, in this particular case, July 27th, that we recognize that as the day that hostilities ceased and that we began to bring our warriors back. So this bill, in 2003, I believe, there was the end to the federal recognition of the Korean Armistice Day. And so we have reinstated that in this bill to say July 27th is now recognized as under this bill as the American-Korean War Veterans Day. And I've got a testifier here who would like to speak to the bill.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Kaiser, go ahead. Identify yourself for the tape and who you represent.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Jerry Kaiser. I'm the chairman of the United Veterans Legislative Council. We are the legislative entity in the state of Minnesota for the veterans organizations, representing all veterans in the state. We are a diverse organization, and I just want to say that this really comes down to respect and recognition. Just like Representative Bigham getting her birthday recognition today. It wasn't necessary.
What?
However, but it was very nice. Let me have to rephrase that. Well, I appreciate though that you recognize her, and there is the Korean War veterans are part of the forgotten war, as the Vietnam veterans were. I was the chairman of president of the Vietnam veterans for 4 years in the state of Minnesota, and on the wall we had a proclamation from Governor Perpich and one from Governor Carlson acknowledging Vietnam Day, but I never saw one for the Korea. And these gentlemen and ladies that are a proud people, and they don't sometimes feel that they need any recognition of that. We have Veterans Day. Well, I respectfully disagree to that, because they do need to be recognized. Not so much that it's a big ceremony or anything like that. They have a memorial. Vietnam veterans have a memorial. World War II now has a memorial. We celebrated many things this last year in World War II. June 9th, D-Day, Pearl Harbor Day, all these things. It's an avenue for us to have recognition for them, both in word and deed, in the schools, and just to have a day that says that we recognize you for your efforts. As I said in the bill, many men and women passed away. The Vietnam veterans, we're not going to support the Vietnam veterans bill unless the Koreans got one of the same. That's where we feel we're brothers in forgotten wars. And as long as I'm breathing, my passion is never, ever again will veterans ever be treated like the Vietnam veterans and the Korean War veterans. We are going to have recognition of the Iraq War in the future, and so this is just, I believe, a tribute to them, both men and women, that we really appreciate the sacrifices, and that the UVLC, we totally support this.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Kaiser. Question, Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Stevenson, for bringing this forward. I must say I had two brothers that were in the Korean War, and they often talked about Korean War Veterans Day and the way they celebrated the veterans' Korean War was to go down to the VFW halls and celebrate and have their own Korean Day Veteran Day. This is a good thing. I only wish that they were here to see this. They're gone. They're passed on now. And if this does happen, I'm sure that they're looking down and saying thank you, Severson, for doing this for them. Even though I might have to go to the VFW hall for them. Yeah. So thank you. I just wanted to say that. So I'm going to support this bill.
Good. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Sounds like it. Representative Dominguez is looking for an excuse to go to the VFW. But I'll go with you. You know, there's talk about why do we have this, because we already have a Veterans Day. But, you know, in my mind, Veterans Day is where we all, you kind of bond with the ones that have gone before and the ones that are going to come after. You just bond with everybody, and it's kind of a, you know, I think of my father who was in World War II, and I kind of bond with him in a way. But you know, when you look at the separate groups, I agree that if Vietnam's going to have a day, Korea better have a day. Remember, the Korean War started in the aftermath, the glow of victory in World War II, when the military was sort of downsized and people were against the military a little bit. They just wanted to forget about war, and training diminished. And so when they went to war, you know, a lot of people were joining the army and other services because it was kind of like a gentlemanly thing to do. And they looked at it as a kind of a club, and a boot camp wasn't as tough. And in fact, if DIs got too tough, the congressional legislators would jump on them. And all of a sudden, we had to go to war, and they weren't trained as hard as they could have been. But they geared up, and they went back to the old way of training, and finally we started doing what we know how to do best in the military. So the Korean vets had an extremely tough time. I mean, that was not a fun war to be in at all. No war is fun, but that was just terrible. Mm-hmm. Because sometimes they were undertrained, and they had the hordes coming across the border from the communists, and then they got home, and I didn't realize that they'd been spit on as well. I mean, when we came home from Vietnam, yeah, we got spit on. I didn't personally, because I came through El Toro, which was a Marine air base, you know, so I didn't have to go through that. But had I gone through San Francisco, Treasure Island, I would have been spit on, and then someone else would have paid the price. Well, let me tell you that. But I mean, I'd probably be in jail. But if Vietnam's going to have a memorial, by golly, have a memorial, by golly, Korea better have a memorial. And if anybody says they shouldn't have one, then I'll talk to you personally as well. In a stern voice.
Voting for this bill.
Well, I'll be kind. But you can see I have a passion for this.
Yes, very much. So,
I think I'll vote yes on this bill.
Thank you, Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you.
Anything else, committee members? Yeah. Representative Tingleton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this is the last day we're meeting, I believe, and since everybody else is joining in with stories, I have a story about the Korean War, too. My dad was a Marine and served in the Korean War, and my parents got married in 1952, and their wedding was delayed by a week.
because of the Marines. And so my mom always used to say that her wedding, their anniversary always should have been a week earlier, but so we always had a story about the Korean War then around their anniversary time. So it's kind of interesting to hear about that.
Good, thank you, Representative Engelstad. Anything further, committee members? Representative Detmer.
Mr. Chairman, again, this is the last time we're meeting. Is that it? Okay.
Yes, I should say, and I know staff doesn't even know about this yet, Representative Doty and I have been talking a little bit about maybe an informal meeting after deadlines, and I'll let him talk about that in just a minute here.
Okay.
But this is the last meeting where we'll actually be moving.
If that's the case, you know, we must continue to keep all of our men and women in service, you know, in our prayers, wherever they are serving in the country. And it's been a real honor to serve on this committee. I mean, this is one committee that we seem to always agree on things, and this is great. I wish all committees would function this way. So just it's been an honor to serve here.
Well, thank you, Representative Detmer. Maybe we should wrap up the bill before we go. anything further on the bill? Okay, thank you, Representative Severson, for bringing the bill forward. And Representative Severson renews his motion.
Mr. Chair, if I could add one other thing. You know, I want to clarify with Mr. Cleary. When we were talking about this, we were talking about making it a day instead of a veterans issue. I was trying to remember if we had put that amendment in there or not. Can you give me some clarification? Part of this process was when we did the Vietnam veterans or the Memorial Day, that it was for the ceasing of hostilities in Vietnam, and this was for the other. We had the Victory Over Europe Day, we had the Victory Over Japan Day, and the Veterans Day was for all veterans. And I'm open to committee feedback on this, that we would make this the Korean War Veteran Armistice Day, which would basically solidify the day in the statute and basically say this is the day, July 27th, that we want to remember the Korean War and the veterans that served in it. And I just want to defer to Mr. Cleary for a second here, if we could.
Okay, Mr. Cleary.
As Chairman and Representative Severson, I agree. We talked about that, and I apparently missed that in the language of this. We put the history in here as you wanted and so on. I think that we could handle that with an oral amendment right now, that on line, well, on the title line, Section 1, Korean War Veterans Day, could be changed to, we could delete veterans and insert armistice, Korean War Armistice Day. And then on almost the last line, this must be, well, it's page 1, the second last line, I can't quite read it. July 27th each year is designated Korean War Veterans Day. It could be Korean War Armistice Day. I think those are the only two places in the bill that would.
I apologize for bringing this up so late here. I was trying to run this over as we were listening to the bill here, and I thought I had done it previously, but as I looked through it, it did not. I just want to get some feedback from the committee and from the members who are here from the service organizations. If we could just maybe get some feedback from them on a yay or nay on that.
Yes, if some of you would like, would any of you like to come down and speak to that? All right, welcome to the committee and identify yourself for the
Mr. Chair, my name is John Cox, and I'm the chairman of the American Legion State of Minnesota Legislative Committee. Everybody has a story about Korean War. I happened to be a senior in high school when the National Guard was mobilized in Park Rapids, Minnesota. And on January 16th and 32 degrees below, we started out from Park Rapids in Jeeps with no heaters and canvas sides and tops. We drove for 5 days to Camp Rucker, Alabama, a trip to never be forgotten. The further south we got, the more clothes we took off. When I left home, I happened to be the battalion commander, the jeep driver at the time. I had a hard time getting my hands and arms up on the steering wheel because I had so many clothes on. That's back in the days when they had the old green olive drab, plain old green uniforms. But Korean War Armistice Day would be great. I know at the present time there is a group of Korean War veterans that meet continually during the year, and you'll see them around. They wear a Korean, they have a Korean War veterans organization. They have the caps and they have the blue blazers, light blue. And I think they would be very happy with this. And I know some of them, and I'm not speaking for all of them, but I would sure pass it on to them, and I think this would be great, and they would really appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Cox. And I see we have one more testifier coming forward. Okay. Welcome to the committee, and identify yourself for the tape.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm one of those guys that was forgotten. Not really.
For the record,
I'm Clayton Ehrman, past department commander of the Military Order Purple Heart. The Purple Heart I received was for my first war, World War II. Korea, I had learned enough during World War II to keep my head down. But I had talked to Jerry about this. I personally don't need any thanks. In hearing the discussion, I understand accepting the day for my fellow veterans of the Korean War. I couldn't understand what the July 27th represented because I had already left Korea, Japan, and I was back in Germany for my fourth tour overseas. I was a 20-year representative of the military, U.S. Army. The team I went into Korea with was out of General Headquarters, MacArthur's, in Tokyo. We were a special operation under UN General Order Number 7 to organize a special operations later known as Green Beret. We went in with a team of British commandos, 14 British, 110 U.S. Army personnel. We were special trained for amphibious commando-type landings. We went in on the 12th of September on a hot beach at Kunsan. This is the area that was designated or rumored around as the invasion point. They even broadcasted at Busan before we went in that this is where the attack was going to take place. After we went in that night, lost a few, we joined up with the 1st Marines at Incheon. We helped clean up the peninsula, then reformed, went up to North Korea. A lot of people went across the 38th. We were up at Wonsan, Hungnam, and I'm a member of the Chosen Few, one of the 3,000 of us that were able to get out of North Korea. You think Minnesota is cold? Try it in field jackets. Some of the fellows didn't fare very well. They were from the south, and I still don't understand how they survived. But anyway, we carry our memories with us, so it's not forgotten to the Korean veterans. They know they were there, and like World War II veterans, we were there. We hold our heads up high. We recognize people that want to recognize the veterans, and we appreciate it. And your vote in reference to this bill will not be forgotten. Our publications will so indicate that this committee did their action and favored the veterans. I appreciate all that you're doing in regards to the veterans. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Wardlaw.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, sir, for your service. And I wanted to point out that having these 2 days, one for Korea, one for Vietnam, what it really does, it gives the rest of us an opportunity to thank you for your service. And that's really what it's all about. It just brings
the public's attention to what you people have done. And when I was in boot camp, we heard story after story about the first Marines going in where you just described. And so a hot beach is not fun, let me tell you that.
Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if it's all right with the committee and the members here, I'd like to make that an oral amendment that we would change the Korean War Veterans Day to Korean War Armistice Day.
Okay, we're looking at line 1.2 to change the word veterans to armistice. That would be after, so it would read relating to veterans designating July 27th as Korean War Armistice Day. That's on 1.2. On 1.5, the title line, changing the word veterans to armistice. And then second line from the bottom, line 2.2. They're hard to read, committee.
1.22.
Okay, 1.22. The second to the bottom line on the bill, the last word there, veterans, changed to armistice. Okay, Representative Dominguez.
Mr. Chair, doesn't that also change the bill itself, where it states relating to veterans designating July 27th as Veterans Day? Doesn't that change that too?
Yes.
Also with section 1, that changes all that too, right? Correct?
Yes. That would be line 1.2.
Right.
So there are three changes. Any further discussion to Representative Severson's oral amendment? Okay, all in favor of the motion, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Okay, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members, and thanks for your indulgence on this. And you can see that this is sometimes an emotional issue, but this is one of those things that is our history, it's our heritage, and I appreciate the opportunity to bring this bill forward and appreciate your vote.
Okay. And I don't remember if I asked, so I'll ask again, anybody else from the audience that would like to testify, or we got it covered. Okay. Representative Severson renews his motion that House File 3672, as amended, be passed with recommendation to the Committee on Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Policy. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. Thank you, Representative Severson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Okay, and Representative Doherty, this possible meeting, we'll have to see how time goes, but this possible meeting, future meeting, if you'd like to talk about that.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Very quickly, members, in my district are two homes for veterans, not official veterans' homes through the state or anything. One's a nonprofit, one's for-profit. I have scheduled a meeting, which I hope takes place next week, between the new Deputy Commissioner, Acevedo, and the managers of both of those facilities, basically so that each of them knows what's being offered by the other one, so that the vets get the best possible service. I am unaware of any other places like that anywhere in the state that are strictly run as homes for veterans. If there are others, of course, I would appreciate you doing the homework and finding those, because what we want to do is be sure we reach out to all the folks that need it. That's the goal of Deputy Commissioner Acevedo. That's the goal of the people that are running those. So I'll be having a meeting. We'll publicize that through the committee, and so anybody that wants to attend just to see what's going on is certainly welcome. And that's
okay.
About it.
Thank you, Representative Doherty. And yes, if any other members are aware of anything else like this in the state, we would like to know about it. And again, we'll have to see how time goes. But yeah, if you can let committee members know when this meeting is, we'd appreciate that. And other than that, this is our last official meeting. We'll actually be doing any official action. This potential meeting is information only. I want to thank all the committee members and staff. This has been, as far as I'm concerned, is my favorite committee, and it's not because I'm a chair. Wow, that doesn't hurt, but this is a good committee. There was a lot of good work done here, and I want to thank each member for your input. I think the work that came out of this committee is very good for veterans and military personnel, but for the state as a whole, too. I believe that the state really backs the work we're doing. I want to thank all the veterans who are here and have been here. I know there's a lot of people over the last couple of years that have been here to testify and just to watch committee activity. But I do want to thank all of you for your service. And any people who have been to any of the meetings, veterans or active military. Also, over the years, we've had testimony from military family members, and I also want to remember to thank military families for the sacrifice that they ultimately end up making, too, because they have family members that are serving our country. And so with that, this is our last meeting. If anybody else has anything they would like to say before we adjourn... Representative Stevens.
I do appreciate everyone on this committee. It is the best committee I've been on, and I do. Everybody's got the same passion and commitment to a very important part of our heritage and our history, and you have done an outstanding job, Mr. Chair, and I really appreciate your leadership and your guidance in this committee, and it's been a pleasure.
Here, here.
Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know, I heard a little bird in the wind here that Representative Wardlow is buying the first Cerveza at the VFW, so I look forward to that.
Representative Wardlow.
Absolutely.
Representative Lorenzo is drinking it.
And, Mr. Chair, I do want to echo, nice job in this committee. This was my favorite committee. I just love coming here. Even though it's Friday morning, I just love getting up and coming here and just hanging out and just nothing else. So thank you very much.
Sure. Can we end with an applause for our staff members? They've just been awesome.
Okay, with that, members, meeting adjourned.